Holiday mit Strange Fruit, ein Stück Musik, das Ende der 30er Jahre ein bissiger Kommentar war zu den im Süden der USA grassierenden Lynchmorde an Schwarzen. Und dieser Kommentar entstand eben auch dadurch, dass das Lied die an den Bäumen hängenden Leichen als Strange Fruit, also als merkwürdige Früchte, beschreibt. Die bereits mit mehreren Preisen ausgezeichnete Schriftstellerin Lauren K. Lane zieht mit dem Titel ihres ersten in den USA im letzten Jahr veröffentlichten Gedichtbandes Difficult Fruit den Hut vor Billie Holiday und dem eben gehörten Titel und kommentiert unter Umständen auch die aktuelle politische Lage in den Vereinigten Staaten. Sie ist jetzt bei mir im Studio. Wir quatschen über die Kraft von Lyrik und Poesie, die Wichtigkeit von Kunst als Form des Protestes im Jahre 2015 und ihre Gastprofessur am Institut für Amerikanistik der Leipziger Universität in diesem Sommersemester. Ich sage aber erst nochmal herzlich willkommen. Welcome to Flux FM. Thanks for stopping by, Lauren Elaine.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, it's a pleasure. How are you doing today?
I'm pretty well. Happy to be in this beautiful city.
It's your first time in Berlin?
No, but it's not going to be my last either.
That sounds like a plan. Does this city seem inspiring to you as an artist?
I think it's just got such a fantastic energy. Yeah. I love it here. I love being here.
Cool. So we'll meet again.
Definitely.
That sounds good to me. I've just mentioned the title of your book, Difficult Fruit, and it reminds us, obviously, of Billie Holiday's song Strange Fruit. Would you say that the title of your book is a reference to that song, or how did that come up?
It's actually pulled from a poem in the book, but I think, you know, who knows where our inspiration comes from, right? Mm-hmm. I'm definitely familiar with the song, with the Holiday, and definitely there's a confluence between mm-hmm. the ideas in her song and some of the ideas in the book. So mm-hmm. I'd like to say her presence haunts the book,
yeah.
And inspires in you know, indirectly for sure. I wasn't consciously thinking of it, but definitely everybody has pointed it out to me, and I thought, of course, she's there.
And that's a good thing, right? If it wasn't your idea, basically, but if the idea still fits,
emerges, exactly.
Then everything's fine. Your poetry can be read as a comment on the American society and as a comment on a new wave of racism that's happening in the United States. But you also write about your journey to womanhood, you write about love, and you write about Rambo. That's what I was fucking surprised when I was into that. But was there a specific time when you realized that you wanted to go for more political topics with your art?
I feel like I'm always interested, right? I feel like there's no way to exist as a human being in the world and not pay attention mm-hmm. to the larger narratives happening around you. And particularly if you're a writer, there's no way to really, for me as a writer, there's no way to be separate from that stuff. So,
yeah.
You know, those things as a person affect me, and so they emerge in my writing. Mm-hmm. It's less planned and more organic, but I think it's critical, and it's something that I'm always open to and excited when it happens.
Yeah. And that's how art art functions, right? It has to get out of your system.
Exactly.
And it's interesting enough for other people to
hopefully
read. You've dedicated your poem The Hoodie Stands Witness to Trayvon Martin, who was killed 2012 by a member of a neighborhood watch who was shooting him basically just because he was wearing a hoodie. Now, in that very poem, you let the hoodie talk. The hoodie is a witness. When have you published that one first? You remember that?
Where did I publish it first?
Oh, when?
My goodness. Oh, when? You know, I tell everybody I'm a very slow writer, so the gross sort of miscarriage of justice allowed that to I can't remember where it was first published,
okay.
actually, but I know it was already a year after,
okay.
you know, when they were still waiting for the
well, the trial.
Yeah, you know, for it to have some weight in the world, I guess. And, you know, there was so much talk and so much, you know, hoodie, counter hoodie. I remember over the Halloween, there was hoodie costumes with blood, which because some people are stupid.
Yeah.
And so there was so much ideas around this symbol of the hoodie that I finally thought, you know, I'm going to use the symbol to make him a person again.
Yeah. And that's an interesting approach to give the hoodie like a human face and a voice, so he can talk to the people and stands witness to
exactly.
what's happened.
It allowed an intimacy also to something that's so big, right? Which is always the challenge, I think, with art that tries to engage with political or social issues, is how to get in a way that doesn't sound like a newspaper report or like, you know, a soapbox, you know? How can you make it a human, intimate, creative connection? And so that happened.
Yeah, that was really, man, it's really brilliant because the hoodie is so close to Trayvon Martin, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's on his skin and it's a beautiful poem.
Thank you.
Would you say that this poem has been a declaration of solidarity for the Million Hoodies movement, maybe?
It's a declaration of solidarity for, you know, equality and justice and personhood and for people of color who are still in the States struggling so much for some measure of recognition of their humanity. And of course, you talked about the new wave of racism. You know, Trayvon Martin is one visible face in so many of young black men who are just shot for being young black men in the wrong place, wrong time, which, and there seems to be no right place or right time to be a young black male. And of course, there's also a movement that points out that there are also women who of color who are being shot by police for various reasons. And so, you know, I think solidarity is not even the word, right? It's part of... It is the word, but it's also to me just there's no way to say silent. Isn't a way to be for me to be silent.
And it's a difference between being or declaring solidarity or being part of a movement or part of a political protest.
I'm not solid. I'm in it. You know?
Yeah. Cool. You've just mentioned that so many people in the United States have been shot alone in 2015. Almost 400 people have been shot by the police. That's what the Washington Post just told us a few days ago. So are statistics like that, are they going to be a topic for your upcoming work, or do you wait for this urgency?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I don't solicit necessarily, but that's not entirely true. I mean, I do pay attention because I think really poetry and most art is really about paying attention because if your eyes are open and your heart is open and your mind is open, then things will come in.
Yeah.
And then once they're in, they got to get out if you're an artist. So they'll make their way out as well. I'm sure... Again, like I said, there's no way for me to really not engage these ideas or these subjects.
But you won't pick up the newspaper and be like, oh, this is exactly the article that I'm going to use as a basic for my next poem or something.
I rarely.
Okay. We've talked about the fact that there's a new wave of racism happening in the US. Would you say that there's a danger of new walls being built up between black and white? Because when one's looking at social media in the United States, it seems as if there is like a wall building up and it's getting bigger between
and in even some of my most intimate relationships, sometimes I have to think about if this is a subject I really want to broach because, you know, there's so much tension. There's so much tension and backlash, I think, you know, around, you know, people feeling threatened. Oh, whiteness are being attacked. I my friends are police officers. I'm like, I think there's a way for us to catch criminals and have accountable law enforcement at the same time. Or to say, you know, I don't understand what the fuss is. You don't, you know, you're alive. I'm like, well, thank you until tomorrow, you know, when I'm walking down the wrong street in a hoodie, God forbid, you know. And so I think it's definitely it's an unfortunate, I think, situation right now. And it's hard because it's such a polarizing subject. And I think part of that really is that nobody's really figured out how to have that conversation without guilt and blame. And I think they're, you know, if you think about those two, blame and guilt can't really coexist. And so if it's, you know, all white people's fault, then there's no room for conversation. If you're just playing the card, the victim card, there's also no room for conversation. Yeah. So it's really, you know, to me, an exercise in empathy and in really trying to understand that, you know, part of privilege, of if you're not a person of color, is ignorance. I mean, not knowing, not understanding, never having to deal with and learning, and but also being not saying that isn't happening, but saying I've never experienced that. Tell me more.
No, and that's something that I miss actually when I look at the discussion in the United States. Is that I do think to myself, where's the empathy? Why is nobody thinking about the way that you feel as a colored person in the United States right now when it's really it's not a fantasy that you could get shot like this very day. You just have to go, as you said, walk down the wrong street at the wrong time of the day and someone's going to shoot you. Before we talk a bit more, let's listen to some music and then we'll find out.
We'll
dance in here to Iggy and the Stooges, Search and Destroy. Yo, are you ready for that?
Bring it on.
Iggy and the Stooges, Search and Destroy auf Lux FM. Bei mir im Studio immer noch die amerikanische Schriftstellerin, Dichterin und Poetin Lauren K. Alleyne. Wir haben uns schon ein bisschen unterhalten über ihre Arbeit und über den politischen Bezug, den ihre Arbeit hat auf die amerikanische Gesellschaft. Wir werden jetzt aber noch ein paar mehr Sachen von ihr erfahren und auch gleich eine kleine Lesung hier über den Äther jagen. With your poetry talking about politics, love and Rambo, how important is involving and using humor and major and minor chords in your poems for you as an artist?
I think, you know, I don't think I'm very funny. The book is called Difficult Fruit, and I often, you know, I'm like, I'm sorry, guys, I'm about to get depressing. But I do think that it's only fair to in the poems to try to show the whole range of human experience, yes, which includes love and which includes being at a writing residency and somehow being stuck watching Rambo 5 and figuring out how can I make these 2 hours of my life worth it, you know, or, you know, praising the body or you know, and for me the major and minor chords were really for artistically a way to enter talking, yeah, about love. Again, I'm always looking for a point of entry with the writing. And but then I think music is so wonderful because, you know, without language, it still gives us, evokes a feeling, yeah, a mood or a tenor, yeah, that seemed to kind of really help.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, poetry is always and has always been rhythmical. It has a relationship to music.
Absolutely.
As well. But you're really living that relationship with writing poems in minor and poems in major about love. I really love that. How and when did you find your beat and your rhythm and your, because I think every poet has his or her own beat that he writes to. Have you discovered your own beat one day in the past?
I don't know if I would say I discovered it. I keep trying to work toward it, but it's so funny, you know. One of the other day I came across like something I'd forgotten I wrote, mm-hmm, and there was such a deep feeling of recognition, like that's exactly how I would write that, mm-hmm, even though I had no recollection of ever having the thing. So the, you know, it's also a moment where I thought, oh, there is a Lauren voice, yeah, or a Lauren style. I don't know when I'm doing it consciously, but it's funny because I was able immediately to recognize it.
Cool.
So I'm hoping it's still evolving. I hope it's still evolving. Nobody, yeah, wants to be stuck as an artist, but you know, I think my concerns don't change, but I hope that how I'm able to enter and articulate them, yeah, in the poems will keep growing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure about that, actually. With poetry slams happening all over the place, it seems as if poetry has again become a more and more important part of American Western culture and of protest culture, mm-hmm, as well. Why is that? Why would you say is that?
Well, I think, you know, the thing about the poetry slam, and as much as I want to say it's new, I also want to say that poetry is oral in its origin,
yeah, sure,
right? And so there's long been the bardic tradition. And so how it manifests in the 20th, 21st century is in poetry slams and bars, and it's cool and it's young. And I think it's definitely with the younger folks finding a way to actually interact and express. And,
yeah,
you know, it's wonderful. In terms of protest, I don't know. I feel like, again, it's funny. There's always a conversation of whether poetry is relevant in the major, yeah, culture or whatever. At the same time, I think poets are people who exist in that major culture. And so for me, writing politically or using the voice or the poem as a way to engage is just my version of citizenship,
sure,
you know?
Sure.
And so, you know, but there's wonderful when there's like-minded people. There's a conference actually called Split This Rock, which is from a Langston Hughes poem, and it's poetry of protest and witness. It happens every 2 years in D.C. We've marched to the Capitol. We did a public poem. I mean, there's all sorts of, I think, you know, of course, the slams are a very, yeah, political space often. And so, you know, I think people are just engaging. I think if you're a word person, if you're a language person, yeah, and you're also conscious socially, politically, that then they meet. They can't help but collide, those,
yeah,
two things.
Yeah. We've basically just mentioned my next question, because I want to ask you myself, how strong is poetry when it comes to giving people a voice who don't have one? And how can poetry make a change, actually?
And I I think that's the, you know, there's two things. To me, there's the wonderful sort of valuelessness of poetry. Mm-hmm. It's sort of beautiful uselessness in a society where everything has to be utilitarian. What's its purpose? What's its value? How much is it worth? How much can you make? Mm-hmm. I think it's really beautiful to have something that you're like, this is a poem. That is what it is. It doesn't, you know, when my publishers were publishing the book, they sent me a questionnaire, like three things that a reader, I'm like, I don't know. But, you know, it's not really quantifiable in that way. At the same time, that's what makes us, it's the unquantifiable, the ephemeral in us that makes us human, isn't it? So, so it's important to feed that. It's important to have things that speak to that part of us, you know. And so I think, I forget the question now.
No, I was like, I was asking if
finding voice.
How strong poetry is to give people a voice who don't have one.
And so I think what happens in that you don't need anything to write a poem besides your own consciousness, right? And, your pencil, paper, your mind, if you don't have one. Close by, a napkin will do. And so I think it's such an autonomous space that doesn't, you know, you can be poor, you don't have to have very much in order to do it. And I'm not picky. I feel like the house of poetry is large. So people are like, this is a poem, that's not a poem, this is bad, slime isn't real. I don't care, you know, because for me, it's really about, you know, the more people are engaging with words and putting them out in the world and then bringing themselves through language into the world, then good things are happening. Yeah. So I'm not, you know, and I definitely think, again, that idea of expression, especially I feel like to young people when they encounter poetry and they get the opportunity to be heard.
Yeah.
It's just so powerful.
Yeah. I forgot his name, but we've been talking to a guy. I think he was from the Philippines and he lived in America. And then he got involved into criminal things, so he was sent back to the Philippines. And no, he was in the States. He was in jail in the States, and he turned out to be a great poet there. He was in jail and he didn't know what to do. And people were telling him, if your jail time's over, you get sent back to the Philippines. And he was like really devastated. And he turned out to be a great poet, encouraging all the other inmates to look at their lives from another perspective again. Don't give themselves up and stuff.
Absolutely.
And that's really a beautiful thing.
It's introspective too. Yeah. You know, it really forces you to, I think a lot of language in the world asks us to do things, to buy something, to vote. You know, it's outward. But what poetry does is it really turns the lens inside a little bit, and again, some people, that's important.
It might be anti-capitalistic art, kind of, right? I mean, in comparison
to
modern artists who sell their paintings for millions of dollars, this is still like, I want to make art and I don't care if you buy it and I don't care how much it's worth.
Yeah, and you know, nobody thinks I'm going to get rich and be a poet. That does not
not
happen.
Anymore.
If you're thinking it, stop.
Maybe that happened like 250 years ago in some areas in Europe, but I mean, that was it. So what's your class at the University of Leipzig about? What are you talking about there?
I'm teaching two classes. I'm teaching a Caribbean literature course, where we're talking about Caribbean writers, what it, you know, post-colonialism, etc. And then I'm teaching an introduction to poetry course where, you know, and in both classes, the students are so incredible. I can't believe English is their second language because they're writing great poetry and they're giving me such wonderful insights in the lit class. So I'm really happy. I'm really excited to be working with those students.
Yeah. That sounds good to me. I'd say we'd listen to another song and then you read us a poem.
Sounds good.
And then you've made it, actually. Vor allem Musik auf von Tandy Adi BMP von TV on the Radio, Speedline, Miracle Masterpiece. Und dann haben wir gleich noch ein Gedicht von meinem Gast Lauren K. Alain.